And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to Friday's 9 till noon show. It's Friday the 17th of November 2023. It's just approaching, or just gone actually, 4 minutes past nine. We are going to be discussing some of the big stories of the day and week over the next hour with our panel, who I'll introduce in a moment. But first, I want to invite you to get involved in the conversation. WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or you can give us a call on 07491 25000. Your comments via email come to, as you might expect, comments@highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show, go on to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, and across your mobile devices. And we're also on Facebook and X. Okay, let's say good morning to our guests. Firstly, a very good morning to Paddy Rooney, PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Good morning, Paddy. How are you keeping?
Yes, good morning, Greg.
I have you. Very good indeed. Senator Lisa Chambers is leader of the Shannon and spokesperson on European and Foreign Affairs with Fianna Fáil, of course. Good morning, Senator. Great to have you back on.
Morning, Greg. Hi, everyone.
And last but not least, Mary T. McBride, Defective Blocs campaigner, human rights and global development consultant. Hi, Mary T. Good to speak to you again.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on again.
No, it's our pleasure. Thanks so much for accepting the invite. Right, opposition motions calling for the withdrawal of the diplomatic status of the Israeli ambassador in Ireland and for the government to refer the Israeli attacks in Gaza to the International Criminal Court for investigation have been defeated in the Dáil this week. Counter-motions put forward by the government passed comfortably and included strongly condemning the attack by Hamas on the people of Israel on October 7th and deplores the escalation of violence in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territory since then. They also expressed deep concern at the catastrophic humanitarian situation in Gaza. I'll start with you, Mary T, if that's okay. Do you think this is the correct outcome? Did Ireland, perhaps, as some might see it, miss an opportunity to send a strong message that people of this country deplore the acts of Israel in the loss of civilian life, notwithstanding deploring the awful events of October 7th?
Yeah, I mean, Greg, I suppose just this morning I was looking at OCHA, United Nations Humanitarian Affairs flash update on Gaza. I use that a lot in my own work. So I guess one thing that really kind of is quite unique to what's happening there is in the updates, you know, you're used to seeing statistics on the humanitarian kind of needs of these areas, but it's a litany of war crimes in their flash updates, which is, you know, something that I felt this week the government really missed an opportunity to show that, you know, we're playing our role as a member of the international community and upholding international law. I think that it was a bit disingenuous of government parties when they saw quite a negative backlash from the public, in voting down the Sinn Féin and Sock Dems motions to try and present this as some sort of false dichotomy that the vote was between, you know, maintaining diplomacy and then non-diplomacy, if you will. But I think what's really important to kind of remember is that sanctions are a form of diplomacy. Granted, they're only used out of necessity to try and pressure a state to comply with its legal obligations when those have been broken. And, you know, no one can argue that the atrocities that are being committed at the moment in Gaza are breaking, you know, international humanitarian law. We've heard it from the United Nations special rapporteurs as recently as last night. They've now escalated it from collective punishment to what they say is a genocide and the start of it. And so I think that there's a big disconnect between the government and the public on this.
But what about the argument, Mary T, and sorry to interrupt you in your flow, that history has shown and history has shown us that you need to keep diplomatic channels open, that you can impose other sanctions and condemn activities, but it's better to have that route to Israel through the ambassador based in Dublin, whereby you can articulate your concerns or whatever it might be, or your proposals that, as I say, history have shown us that you need to keep those diplomatic lines open?
I think you're right for us to look at history. And I suppose one case study that would be, you know, you could draw quite a few parallels with Israel is the apartheid regime in South Africa. And at that time, you know, Ireland was quite an outlier internationally. You know, we had developed relations, diplomatic relations with the ANC long before other, you know, members of the international community got there. We, you know, imposed sanctions, boycotting famously, you know, the case of the Dunn Stores worker, starting that. So I think for me, I don't see, you know, repeatedly sort of condemning or raising deep concern about what's happening in Gaza. I mean, we're only 5 weeks into the conflict and we have, is it between 11 and 12,000 civilians killed, mainly children and women. The UN aid workers and staff, I mean, it's the largest death they've had in a conflict ever. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see that. I just don't see that working. And on the 6-1 last night, Paul Cunningham succinctly summed up the Taoiseach's visit to Israel when he said that his efforts were rebuffed.
Okay. I'll come back to you. Lisa Chambers, if I could come to you, if that's all right first. Senator Lisa Chambers, do you think it was the correct outcome? You're muted, Lisa. I beg your pardon. Sorry. Just so we can hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. My apologies.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, I'll go through a couple of the issues raised by Mary. I think, you know, we're all in agreement that what is happening in Israel and Gaza and the conflict there and what Israel are doing to the people of Palestine is abhorrent. It is revenge. It is collective punishment. It is wrong and it needs to stop. And that is the message from all of us, I think, across all parties. Nobody for one second is condoning what has happened. And of course, we condemn the Hamas attack and the taking of hostages. One of those hostages is an Irish citizen, an 8-year-old little girl, Emily Hand. So there's nobody, I think there's an element of, for some strange reason, there seems to be an element of competitiveness in this debate as to who cares more or who condemns more the killing, when really we all agree that it needs to stop. We need a ceasefire, we need peace, and we need a two-state solution. And what's happening is just wrong in every respect. The two motions that went before the Dáil this week, the Sinn Féin motion was focusing on the International Criminal Courts and Ireland and asking Ireland and the Irish state to refer the conflict in Gaza to the ICC. The reason the government didn't agree to that motion and put down a counter motion is because the conflict has already been referred to the ICC and there is an ongoing investigation. So it would have made no legal and no practical difference whatsoever. It is already being investigated. There is a live investigation active since March 2021, and it will investigate the October 7th attack and everything up to the present day. Mm-hmm. So it's already happening. So it was really, I mean, it was just completely ineffective, and what it would have looked like, and the Irish government position, because when you're in government, you have to think about these things.
But Lisa, I just want to make one final point. Please, go ahead.
It could have been seen as putting political pressure on the international court and politicising what is an independent process. Mm-hmm. So that was the reasoning that the government gave, but that sometimes doesn't get publicised or spread to the same extent. And it makes it look as though we don't want Israel to go before the ICC. We absolutely want Israel to face sanctions and to go before the ICC and be investigated mm-hmm. for what we can see as war crimes. We want that to happen. And I do believe that that will happen.
Yeah.
Now, the Social Democrats' motion was then focusing on expelling the Israeli ambassador. Quite frankly, I think that's an idiotic suggestion. It is just, it beggars belief. We had the Taoiseach and Micheál Martin in Cairo on Wednesday, where 23 citizens managed to get across the Rafah crossing. We only managed to do that because we have an Irish ambassador to Israel and we have maintained diplomatic channels with all actors in the Middle East. The only way we can get the remaining Irish citizens out, because there are still more people there, is to keep links open. If we expel the Israeli ambassador, they will expel our ambassador. And there are people in the defence community that would have grave concerns for our soldiers in Lebanon and how Israel could retaliate in that regard. So the reason we didn't take that action is because not only would it have made no difference to achieving peace or saving lives, it could actually have put in danger the safety and the welfare of Irish citizens in the region that we are literally actively right now trying to get out of there. Okay. And that's why that didn't happen. Again, maintaining diplomatic ties doesn't mean you agree with the country. It doesn't mean that you don't condemn them. And the Taoiseach in the Dáil this week used extremely strong language where he said, this is not self-defence. It is disproportionate and it is collective punishment and it's wrong. Okay. And that is our head of state saying that on the record. So we all agree on this, but politicising this and creating divisions in Ireland, I don't know why we're doing that because it's just...
Right, OK, I'll come back to you, Mary T. I presume there's something that you might want to reply to, but first I want to bring Paddy Rooney in just to get his overview of what we've been talking about so far in the events during the week. Paddy, what do you think?
I hope you can hear me, Greg, because my microphone isn't working.
You sound great, I'm not going to lie. You look a bit purple, but we'll get through that.
There was a guy listening to your programme this morning, a guy called James in Carrigart, and he told me one of the days there that every time he hears me on the radio, I come across as very right-wing. Well, I'm not right-wing, but I'm about to express a right-wing comment again. And that is that I am with Lisa on this. I don't think it's the right thing to do to expel the Israeli ambassador, and there's a lot of reasons for doing that. One of the reasons being is that we share a lot of values that we know as the Irish state with the Israeli state in the fact that, you know, they are a democratic country. They change their system of government by national plebiscite. They have a system of government quite similar to our own, our upper lower house and a presidency. They have a lot of rights that we take for granted in this country. They have them in Israel. And the countries around them, circulating them all the way from Lebanon in a circle round to Egypt, don't actually have any of those rights or systems or values. That is not to say now, though, that we give Israel a blank check here that they have a right to do what they do. But I was actually, it came to my mind there when I was listening to my two previous speakers saying a comment by Moshe Dayan, the famous Israeli general back in the 1973 war when Israel was attacked by Syria. And he said that Israel will only ever lose one war because they will not be around to fight a second one. But as I say, that does not give, Ireland is not giving Israel a blank check to do whatever they do. However, Padraig O'Brien, the journalist with Channel 4, had a feature on a few nights ago. And he was making the point, why are we so exercised in this country about what's taking place in the Middle East at the moment? And not too far away from the Middle East, there's a civil war taking place in Yemen. And there's been something like in excess of 250,000 civilians have been killed in that war. How come we weren't exercised about what happened in Syria when there was a three-way civil war between the Assad government, anti-government forces and ISIS, and there was something in excess of 500,000 people mm-hmm. were killed? Why is it that the people in the Middle East are, that there seems to be more value to their lives than there is in others? And God knows what's going on in Afghanistan at the moment. See, we're not able to keep up with them.
No, but the people can only react to what they're exposed to. And from the get-go, there was blanket coverage across all media of this situation. You know what I mean?
Sure. I know that.
It's very hard to get exercised about something that you're not being given any information on. I don't know. Why is BBC, Sky, CNN, why aren't they as interested in what's happening in Yemen and how that situation is being funded and manipulated?
That's true, Greg. This must be the first war that we're watching live on TV, because that's what it is a war. But no, I think it's populist and it's absolutely silly that we would actually.
But you see, Paddy, it's not. People are so. Notwithstanding the fact that other atrocities may well be happening in the world, the public, it's very, very hard to even sleep at night when you learn that 5,000-6,000 children have been wiped off the face of this earth, that 3,000 or 4,000 women who aren't members of Hamas have just been destroyed, that hospitals, they've got no power, fuel is being withheld from them. These 16 babies yesterday born prematurely, no chance of survival, babies being wrapped in tinfoil, there's no health care. It's, what can you do? The general public, the ICC, But what you could do is send a message and say it's not permanent, but say, you know, maybe even be a little unselfish as it relates to the Irish that are in Gaza. I don't know. Maybe that's controversial. I'm not saying this should be the case.
I'm not saying that,
you know, enough is enough. We need to send a strong message. But what instead we see the Israeli ambassador at the Fianna Fáil Ardéis. We don't see the Palestinian ambassador. I'm not sure if they're invited or not. We see Micheál Martin in the same week as we declined to take this action in Israel, you know, observing damage to the ceiling of a house in Israel. So it's the optics and how that makes the Irish people feel. It's not technical, it's human. I'm making the point generally, Paddy.
I'm not putting this on you. Most of my adult life, Greg, as you know, in hospitals, either this country or in the NHS in England, and I'm very familiar with the footage of that, the hospitals, the two hospitals that are featured in Gaza when they go around with all the equipment and so on and so forth. I don't condone it at all. I think it's absolutely abysmal and atrocious that that's taking place. However, what I'm saying is that it's I don't think it's the right thing to do for us to expel the...
And that's the only point I was making. I know you don't condone anything. It was only to the point that we don't... The scenario I was outlining was all leading to the only possibly one thing we could do.
I know your history in healthcare is very, very strong. I agree with all that. And I support this country cannot give Israel a blank check to do whatever they like, because there is a line somewhere, and it is probably crossed at the moment, where this has gone now from defence to retaliation
and
to
revenge.
And I accept the fact that Israel should be taken to book and taken to account for this. Absolutely.
Okay, Lisa, come back in there, please.
Yeah, just you made a couple of points around the Fianna Fáil Ardéis and the Taoiseach's visit to Israel. It's been a long-standing tradition for our party conference, which is not, this isn't a big get-together or a party, it's a policy conference. We invite every member of the diplomatic corps and always have done. Okay. And yes, the Palestinian ambassador was there. So we weren't going to create a diplomatic incident and snub the Israeli ambassador. But importantly, she sat there and she listened to the Taoiseach deliver a very strong message that we do not condone what Israel is doing and we want it to stop. And that's what diplomacy is delivering your message to those you don't disagree with or that you don't agree with. In terms of his visit to Israel, when he was in Cairo to get those 23 people across the Rafah crossing, instead of posing for photo shoots, which lots of politicians might have done, he went straight into a car and he drove for more meetings in Israel. And as was reported, they were extremely tense. But he didn't flinch and he held his own and he represented our country. And then he was heading to the West Bank straight afterwards to meet the Palestinian Authority. So as I said, he was meeting and talking to everyone because we are still trying to get people out. And you talked about optics, Greg. I think the Taoiseach has shown himself as a politician to be less concerned with optics and more concerned with getting stuff done and actually doing his job. Right. Whereas I think some politicians tend to look at the optics and try to create certain optics that are not real and are not true as to what's actually happening.
Okay, Mary, do you want to come back there now? I know you've been waiting.
Yeah, I just want to come back on two things, I suppose. The first thing is, you know, Paddy, I'd respectfully disagree with your point that we share a lot in common with Israel in terms of its practices at the moment. I think as an illegal occupying force, Irish people, you know, do feel an affinity in this conflict, but it would be with the Palestinians on the whole. And you can see that with every weekend for the last 5 weeks across all from our major cities to our small towns across Ireland, people are showing up in their hundreds or thousands in cities to display that solidarity. And I just want to say, I don't think that's going away anytime soon, nor should it. And also, you know, a system which has been described as apartheid by the United Nations Special Procedures. That would be another reason I don't feel that there are similarities between our political system and Israel's. They're quite different. Israel, in that sense, is not a normal democratic state. And then I suppose the point around the ICC, and, you know, Lisa would be well aware of this, the history of the open investigation on the situation in Palestine. Al-Haq, which is a very well-respected human rights organisation and has been funded by Irish Aid for many years, very well-respected, issued a joint statement with several other Palestinian human rights organisations about the Sinn Féin and Social Democrat motions, pleading with the government to support them, mm-hmm. Particularly on the referral to the ICC. And the reason for that, and I urge everybody to read it, it's on their website, is they provided a whole history of how difficult it has been to get that investigation opened. Palestine referred the case to the ICC in 2015. That's 8 years ago. After 5 years of a preliminary examination, which is quite unique, I have to add that it took 5 years, they then referred it for another 2 years for a jurisdictional consideration. The UK and the US have made very active efforts to circumvent the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court with regards to the situation in Palestine. And Al-Haq has described the situation as fragile, and that a referral, whether the investigation given or despite the investigation being open, would add further necessary protection and buttressing to that investigation. So I think, you know, it's really, really important. You know, Lisa said, let's not politicise it. It is politicised.
Okay. Can I put it to you, though, the strong argument that Lisa made, that if we were to expel the Israeli ambassador, they would return the favour, and this could frustrate, hinder, or even stop efforts to return Irish citizens, or to have them get an opportunity for them to leave Gaza, and also put our forces in danger in South Lebanon. Do you want to address that directly?
The thing I don't, to be quite honest, Greg, and I put this question back to Lisa then, I haven't really understood that argument. And, you know, I kind of feel that we're unwilling to, you know, uphold international law out of fear rather than principle. Is it the case that Israel are holding our Irish citizens hostage then? Is that what we're saying? And is that why we're not willing to impose sanctions for, you know, clear war crimes?
Okay, that's a very interesting counterpoint. Lisa, do you want to come back to that, and then I'll bring Paddy back in just before we take a break?
Yeah,
Is Israel holding us hostage?
No, but it's well known that Israel have a significant influence in terms of the Rafah crossing. Egypt will tell us that. The Egyptian ambassador has told us that here in Ireland. So they're not holding our people hostage, but they are a major actor, and they are part of the discussion to get people through the Rafah crossing. And it's the only place we can get people out of. It's the only place.
Why can't we get them through the Rafah crossing?
Well, lots of countries, Mary, with respect, are having these negotiations. This is not just Ireland. We're not the only country citizens there. Sorry, I can't hear you, Mary.
Why do we have to negotiate? Are they being held hostage? You know, in effect.
No, but Mary, sorry, the reality of the situation is that Egypt will tell you, even though it's Egypt's border, Egypt will tell you that they kind of liaise with Israel in terms of the Rafah crossing. The Rafah crossing has been bombed on 4 occasions. So to suggest that we don't need to engage with Israel is just not the reality of the situation. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just telling you that that's what's happening there. Okay. So we have to have an ambassador in Israel to be able to have those conversations. And in terms of unwilling to uphold international law, any suggestion that Ireland is not upholding international law is not correct. Of course we are. We have also said from the very outset, straight after October 7th, that we expect Israel to act within international law, and we have condemned them for not doing that. And also in terms of the ICC, the reason I make the point, and I take what you're saying, Mary, in terms of the politicization of it, but that's, you know, you're talking about the US and the UK politicizing that process. We don't want to politicize that process, and we have to act in the interest of our own state. Mm-hmm. It's just a fact that that investigation is, I appreciate it took a long time to open, but it was opened in March 2021 and it's active now and will investigate these matters. Okay. But the suggestion from the motion was that Israel hadn't been referred to the ICC, or sorry, the conflict hadn't been referred. And there was an element of, I think, attempting to blur the situation and somehow suggest that we didn't want Israel's actions to be investigated by the ICC. And I just wanted to put on the record that it is being investigated and we want it investigated.
Okay. All right, Paddy Rooney, last word before the break, please.
You see, the sad thing about all of this, Greg, I suppose, is that this war did not start on the 7th of October this year. It's been going on for a very, very long time. And the solution at the time, I suppose, after the Second World War, because there were so many displaced Jews, particularly in Europe, that the state of Israel was set up, and that the seeds of destruction, I suppose, and rancor was sown at the time, because there were so many people, something I think around the tune of 350,000 people were displaced against their will to allow that state to go on. And Mary Therese makes the point very well indeed that, well, I said about we share a lot of values, well, let's say then that they are nearer to the Israeli state than they are a lot of the states around them. But this isn't going to be the end of it. There's going to be a lot of more people killed here, because Israel seems to have very strong friends throughout the world. America seems to be one of them. The European Union seems to be the other. And those allies seem to be deaf and blind to what's taking place in the in Palestine at the moment. And this is going to run to some form of a conclusion, but it is not going to be the end of it, because what Israel is doing is that they're radicalizing the people in Palestine, and I suspect all of the Muslim countries around them, near and afar as well. And I think there's probably much more trouble coming down the track here next year, 5 years, 10 years, 50 years.
And potentially, I would say, not just in the Middle East either.
No, absolutely not. And the problem you see is that there's a lot of, Muslims and people of the Islamic faith from the Middle East that have been displaced mostly to Europe or whatever, and they may be bringing a lot of anger and angst with them. And if they want to strike back at Israel, it may well not be on Israeli soil that they're going to do it. So, you know, the quicker that people try and calm this and get this under control, I think the better for the, not alone the people in Gaza, but also the people throughout the wider world, I suspect.
All right, thanks so much for that. You've just heard the voice there of Paddy Rooney, PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital, Senator Lisa Chambers, and we also have Mary T. McBride, who's a Defective Blocks campaigner in human rights and global development consultant. Back with more shortly. Hi, Greg. That last speaker is right. The big why are we again being manipulated by the media? Because they obviously want us invested and focused. First Ukraine, now Gaza. I'm not in favour of any war. It's always the innocent who suffer, as we see every day. But I have to ask, why are the world media showing this war, not Yemen, Syria, etc.? You have to ask what's happening in the background when they have the world so focused on this. I do fear we are on the brink of World War III. It's quite worrying, troublesome, notwithstanding everything we've been talking about, isn't it? Lisa, just the state of the world at the moment. You know, we do. I'm not saying we're on the brink of a world war. You would hope we're not, and some would argue that it is, to some extent, happening in different parts of the world by proxy. But it would be nice to see a bit of stability in the world, wouldn't it?
It would. I think people are really anxious and concerned about what's happening. I mean, between climate change and conflict, there's a lot of bad things happening in the world. I did take some solace yesterday, though, when I saw the UN resolution that, and this is only a small little glimmer of hope, and most people will say it doesn't go far enough, but there was a UN resolution that was passed yesterday calling for a humanitarian pause. And we've heard lots of conversations on the wording pauses and ceasefire. But interestingly, the US, the UK and Russia abstained. And that might seem like a small thing, but that was them sending a message. And we just have to hope that, you know, it is going to come down to the US and the UK and bigger actors and the EU as a whole to try and bring stability to the Middle East and to try and get a ceasefire and get this conflict under control in some way. And we can just see slight movements that will give you some hope that we might get there soon.
A TikTok video which documented the discovery of a large number of patient files, thousands and thousands, in an abandoned, or in St. Connell's Hospital, which is an abandoned hospital, prompted a security view by the HSE. The video posted on social media platform TikTok shows many boxes of historical confidential patient files in a building at that old hospital, which is in Letterkenny. The creator of the video, Jamie, is seen going through the files, which contain medical notes, confidential information, x-rays and information on treatment. There are a number of follow-up questions which we had for the HSE, like why were the files ever stored there? Who made that decision? What's the hospital's policy on file storage? What's the time frame on file storage? Is this is there any archive of them if they ever had to be referred to? What security, if any, was in place? Jamie says he walked through an open door. Whether he did or not, he's going to have to take that up with Ngaida Shiokana. But those questions now go unanswered because the HSE response is we're not going to talk about this anymore because the matter has been referred to the Gardaí. I'll start with you, Paddy, if that's all right. Is that a satisfactory response from the HSE? Do patients, or particularly maybe if it's our parents or grandparents, are we not entitled to know what was going on there and what's going to be done with these files going into the future?
Well, just, Greg, when I thought it was safe to come back on the radio that we were going to be talking about something else other than a health issue or an LUH issue, but anyway, here we go.
But you know it's a coincidence of timing, Paddy.
Oh, sure, yeah. No, it's fair enough. One, I know that I was listening to your interview with Councillor Kieran Brogan on Tuesday, was it, about this. And one of the things that's going around was that some of the charts that had been damaged in the flood in July 2013, that this was them. Well, I can categorically state anyway that there was something like about 20,000 medical files that were damaged in that flood. But because it was contaminated water, there was a licensed, approved company came in externally, took all those charts away and dried them and digitized them. And then they were destroyed, right? And the hospital... In conjunction with the national policy on the retention and destruction of medical files or whatever, those charts were all destroyed. So they are not charts associated with flood. I can say that. The second thing is that if we're I'm not on TikTok, so I haven't seen that video. The only thing I've seen is the three still photographs of it, and I'm actually gobsmacked, if that's the word, that that guy that was on your program was able to walk in there, because that building, not alone is the windows all around that building bricked or boarded up, but they're actually blocked up. You'd need a jackhammer to get into it. And from what I remember of that building, there's a big heavy door and a bolt. It's easier to get into a prison than it is to get
And there's
into
a cage
that.
Around that door as well.
I'm gobsmacked that, because there's only a very small number of people who have access to that building. And the fact that they would walk away, this guy that was on your program said that he walked into it. Well, the only way he could have walked into it is that staff that were there walked away without locking it up. And I would
okay,
have
but let's just, so let's just put that to one side, because that is, I believe the PS and I have spoken to him, and that is, he's going to have to face the consequences there. He's not protected by any whistleblower but that being said, what did happen, for right or wrong, and it wasn't us that published it, it's gone viral. Boxes of boxes, room after room of these files. What is the policy in terms of the retention of this data?
Well, there is a national policy. It's not the hospital. It's not a policy just relevant to LUH. There is a policy in relation to the retention and the destruction of medical records. Medical records don't have to be kept forever. There is a policy in place around, you know, so many years after, I think it's about 7 years after somebody is deceased, the organization that's a holder of that record.
But in relation to the cervical check scandal and other things, there's 30 years that some of them have to be retained.
I was just about to go on to that. There is exceptions to that rule. Would say, for instance, pregnant women who received anti-D medication during pregnancy, people who have organ transplant, people who have HIV, and all of that. There's a whole load of exceptions to it. I don't know. There was no records stored in that building in my time. I don't know how they got there, because there is a medical records depot right bang in the middle of the hospital, and there's something like 500,000 files, active files stored there. And very few people within the hospital have direct access to that. It's only approved people, and the doors aren't even locked. It's an electronic access to it. I don't know what these files are. The wee bit that I've seen anyway is that the X-ray films, now the hospital hasn't been using X-ray films in at least the last 20 years because it was one of the first hospitals in the country to have.
But I did, just in terms of, because the HSC described these as historic, I did see one of the documents, which you didn't, which has the name of a consultant on it who actually moved to this country relatively recently. When I say relatively recently, not in the 1930s or the 40s. He's now currently operating in Sligo University Hospital. So suggest this is 1920s, 30s, 40s. I'm not saying they're not there, but there are contemporary files in there.
I'm gobsmacked to tell you the truth that if it is, and I accept what you say here, that the files are as that recent that they would be in that particular building. I don't know why they're there, or because they've seen the photograph and they don't seem to be stored in a very orderly manner.
Or respectful. So do you believe the HSE should not be hide behind, let me put it like that, this being a matter for the Gardaí, and answer the concerns of the public out there as to what's the future of these files, whose files are in there, why are they in there? What's the situation with GDPR?
I'm just a private member of the general public.
Of course you are.
I don't think that's good enough. I mean, I can't understand why questions can't be answered if there's something that's been hidden here. I mean, best place to always start, Greg, is at the truth, right?
Yeah.
And to see what is stored here and what happened. Because it just beggars belief now that current charts that you say...
I never said they were current, but there's evidence to show from the 30s and 40s.
If you come across the name of a consultant that's now working in Sligo, that's current as far as I'm concerned. And I'm afraid, you know, I would like a bit more of an explanation around this. Not enough to say that the guards are involved, because leaving the role of the guard, it's right, by the way, that the guard are involved, because somebody broke into that building and, you know, didn't have authorised access to that particular building. And that's just a separate matter. I think that the hospital itself should be able to explain about what is there and why it is there and how come that the place hadn't been secured.
Mary Teresa.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with Paddy there. I think, as you say, you know, maybe it's unintentional, but it does seem that they're trying to use the police investigation to hide behind it. And, you know, my understanding is that the scope of the police investigation is specifically looking at the event of entry into, you know, the building and that and into the room. So I wouldn't understand the logic then for not answering, you know, questions publicly. I mean, I'm from Donegal, you know, Paddy is too. It could be, you know, our records, our family members' records, or that could be affected there. And I can't think of any more sensitive or personal data than your medical records. I think, you know, that the hospital definitely, if it wants to sort of address the confidence of the public, you know, even just from that sort of standpoint, they should definitely, you know, be open to answering questions and communicating quite quickly, I think, something about the incident and what's happening in terms of an investigation or that.
Yeah, the most significant piece of information that has come to our attention since this happened is the information from Paddy Rooney from his experience in the hospital that the flood damaged files were digitalised and then destroyed, because the presumption was that they must be those because they're in such a poor condition, water damaged, they look to have been dumped in there. So that's very interesting. And briefly, Lisa Chambers, I know you're somewhat removed from this and it's kind of Donegal specific to some extent, but would you have any concerns that the HSE are refusing to answer the legitimate questions the public might have, you know, even rather than saying, well, we can't talk about this now because there's a break-in being investigated?
Yeah, there's probably a better balance that could be struck. And I'm only going, the information I have has come from Highland Radio's website, so I'm only going on what's reported. But I understand an element of, if there's a live investigation and somebody is being investigated for a potentially criminal action, that there's a limit to what can be shared in terms of information. However, I'm certain that they can probably share a bit more than what they're sharing. And the hospital have a job of work to do now, not just to you know, make sure that the actions of that individual are investigated properly, but they're going to have to restore trust with the public in Donegal now and patients and families that go to that hospital. And that needs to be, I would say, their priority, actually. And to do that, they should be a bit more forthcoming with any information that they can give that wouldn't jeopardise the investigation. And that's probably all I can say that might be of use.
Yeah, no, it's very useful. The conversation continues in Ireland of whether or not we should introduce assisted dying in this country. Fergal Toomey of the Royal College of Physicians of Ireland, a consultant in palliative medicine, pointed to a major progress which has been made in promoting high quality care at the end of life across the spectrum of healthcare provision in Ireland. He told the Joint Committee on Assisted Dying last month, I believe it was, that legalising assisted suicide risks a shift away from the funding, development and delivery of new and existing palliative care services and potentially reducing research. Now, yesterday, we heard from Clancy and people like him who was on the programme. He's got MS, he's currently happy, but intends to end his life when he loses his independence. He's got the backing of his four daughters in relation to that. So he says he's going to travel to do it. Should Irish citizens have to travel abroad to fulfil their wishes in this regard, Mary T?
Yeah, it's a really, really difficult topic because, you know, at the centre of it are people who are suffering from terminal illness, you know, a lot of, you know, very painful conditions. And that, I haven't given a lot of thought to it personally because I'm in the privileged position, thankfully, touch wood, that I don't have a direct family member in that situation. However, I suppose the only thing I would say is, in principle, I don't have anything against the idea of having medical assistance in dying at the end of life. And as I understand it, it would be highly regulated and limited to very specific circumstances. And one thing I would say is that I'd be quite concerned if the debate kind of moves away from a very medical and scientific kind of approach to, you know, as we've seen with, you know, reproductive rights of women in this country, that can very easily happen. And yeah, I do think that the option needs to be made available in this country for people, you know, who want, you know, to...
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I sat listening to him and I didn't really have anything to say, nor did I feel I had a right to say anything because it's his life and his experience. Paddy Rooney, have you a view on this?
Well, I'm not a big fan, Greg, of an authoritarian state telling people what to do, but I do accept the role that the state have a role in trying to regulate society and so on and so forth. Now, I used to work as a nurse in two disciplines, in two jurisdictions, and the whole principle about assisted dying would be completely anathema to nursing because the conversation then sort of creeps into things like euthanasia and eugenics and all that very negative, horrible stuff. However, could you imagine exercises that you're taking for granted there as you sit on your seat, that the fact that you're able to breathe unassisted, Greg, that you're able to cough, could you imagine sputum in your trachea and you couldn't cough it, or you can't, saliva in your mouth and you can't swallow, that you have a simple pain like an itch in your arm and you can't scratch it, and that you're in pain, right? Now, there are many people living in this unfortunate nightmare, and that they're... you know, it's all going to have a very negative outcome. I think that I, in principle, would be in favour of it, but with very, very strict criteria. And I suppose the big thing is that it would be the patient's choice only, not a doctor, not the state, not the family or whatever, and not anybody who wasn't in a position to
make a decision themselves. How do we prevent people going, oh, I don't want to be a burden on my family or society? You already hear that already. And then this being, have you considered this? Do you know what I mean?
No,
make sure that doesn't happen?
You see, what the strict criteria, for instance, would be something around the fact that you would have to have some kind of a triple lock system in place. Yeah. One, for instance, would be an examination by a consultant physician to verify that a person meets the criteria, whatever that is. Secondly, that there would be a review done, I would say, let's say in principle, by somebody like a consultant psychiatrist to be able to say that a person is in a position to make a rational decision here. And secondly, and thirdly, then that there would be something like a solicitor would have a look at it. Something similar, we'll say, for instance, that we have in the state at the moment where people who are detained against their will in approved mental health units, and then that they have a right to have a tribunal and a solicitor advocates on their behalf. Something like that. I mean, I would set the bar very, very high for it. I mean, it's a bit, here we go again, about, we have a long history in this country about women going outside the jurisdiction of the state to have termination of pregnancies and we didn't have that, whether it's not getting into the argument of whether it's right or wrong. So it's okay then. Okay. It's not okay, but people then have to go to Switzerland or they have to go to Holland to avail of this service. I mean, I'm open to it in principle.
Okay, then.
But with huge, the bar sets very, very high in relation to access in it.
And Lisa Chambers, sorry, just a minute to you on this one, if that's okay.
Yeah, and I think I would have grave concerns around elder abuse and the word you use there, Greg, burden, because doing constituency work, I can see the challenges and just older people tend to want to look after those coming after them. But just to say, in the context of this, France is also deep in a debate on this. They're having their version of a citizens' assembly. Portugal have had the president veto it twice, where the parliament are kind of saying they want to decriminalise it. And we have five countries currently in Europe, Belgium, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, Germany and Spain, that do allow it, and Austria, Finland and Norway that are kind of passive to it and allow you to refuse hydration and artificial feeding. So it's a it's an ongoing debate across the way. But I, as somebody that would be considered fairly liberal, I think, in terms of the current politics in Ireland, I would be, I just don't know how you put the safeguards in place that we would need to see in place. I just don't know if you can do that, notwithstanding the really difficult cases that we'd like to be able to look after as well.
Okay, Lisa Chambers, thanks so much for your time this morning. I really do appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Paddy Rooney, as always, a pleasure to have you on the show. Hopefully next time, maybe there won't be a big medical story in the week that you're scheduled to be on. Take care of yourself, Paddy. We do appreciate your insight, actually. And last but certainly not least, Mary Teresa McBride. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a lovely weekend.
You too,
I really enjoyed your input today. Thank you so much. Okay.